say, if I stand at a place here, I'm right behind the pole, so no one can see me. History of these rules is about a year and a half ago. I know you are aware of that. That we started these rules to come up with a way to help the state engineer be able to evaluate supplemental water rights. This has been a difficult project. Historically, state engineer has just tried to use our best engineering judgment on how we did that on change applications that came before us as people separated rights, and we were making our best effort. We got to be of the opinion that was really not the best way to do it, and that water users really needed to be part of that process. And so we developed those rules about a year and a half ago, went to publication, got some significant comments, and considered those comments, and as a result of that, rewrote the rules and abandoned that original cut of the rules. So it was a little more than a year later, we had another draft or set of rules that we developed, and we actually published them as rules. And then we had a series of public meetings where we tried to get people together to make comments on concerns that they had. Very interested in trying to get input on these to make sure that we do these the right way, that we are developing a rule that's going to be a beneficial tool to everybody as they try to come forth and file change applications with us to help evaluate these rights. We got some additional comments through those meetings, and we appreciate those comments. And through the advertising of the administrative rules, we got comments in. We thought, you know, there's enough here that we really need to take these under consideration again. And we have abandoned that advertising of that other draft of rules, and we are actually planning on going to advertising one more time. But we've taken the comments, we've incorporated them the best we can. Lee's made a great effort to try to put all of the, or highlight all of the substantive changes in the rules that we've made. There are several technical changes that we made, capitalizations and eliminating some words in sentences to help them read a little bit better. But if it didn't change the meaning of the sentence, we haven't highlighted them in this draft. But we will have that draft available where all of the changes that we made to that second set of rules will be available on the website that you can go actually on the website under SOL. I think it's SOL Supply rules that lead that you can just...
Yeah, the same link they use in the past to get the recording and the PowerPoint, the comments.
Okay. And we are recording the proceedings today, and I guess this will be available for you to listen to also through the website. So we've made a real effort to try to incorporate all of the things that you thought were important. We think we were about there. Okay? We think we've made a good draft of this, and some good recommendations have been made, and we've incorporated them into these new rules. Now, our plan is to move forward with these rules. We're hoping to be able to go to the administrative rules and get these rules published around the 1st of March. And in order to do that, we have to have everything to administrative rules about the 15th of this month. But if you have additional comments after that, it may be part of this administrative rule process as we go to publication. So please watch for that. But we are where we are today because of the input that we've received. And I think the draft that we have is, I mean, it's significantly different than it was a year and a half ago. And I think we are where we feel very comfortable with the division moving ahead and being able to address your concerns and the concerns that we have, too. So thank you so much for your help. We'll look forward to your comments and other input that you would have. And I guess at this point, I'd like to turn it over to Lee Sim, who's put together a PowerPoint to kind of talk through some of these substantive changes. And then we'll open it up to questions, just if you have questions about it.
Thank you, Kent. As Kent indicated, there were actually quite a number of changes that we made, but they were mostly stylistic kinds of things. And rather than really confuse this document with those, we didn't put them in here. There are things like we did away with that really horrible acronym that we came up with before, and now we just talk about declarations. So that's one of the things that's in here. So if you have questions about those, if you think there might be other things, if you're curious about all of the changes, go to our website and you'll be able to see the document there that has everything. I'd just like to go through and talk about the comments that we received and sort of lump the concerns. Honestly, about 80% of the comments that we received was about this concern, that the rule as we had drafted it last, when you saw it, that it would have some unintended negative consequences for or impacts on municipalities, public water suppliers. And so some of the major things that we've changed in here, even though they're not big changes as far as wording goes, we think that they are big changes as far as concept goes, and should, we believe, address that concern. The first thing is that as we thought about this whole declaration process, we decided that there really was no need every time, in every situation, that if a change application required a quantification of the beneficial use on a water right because it was part of a water use group, we didn't necessarily need to have the quantification of all of the other water rights in that water use group. That declaration could be solely limited to the water right that's going to be changed. However, in doing that, all of the water right holders involved in that water use group would have to agree to that declaration, would have to agree to that quantification of that one water right. So we hope in one way that will take a burden off, that if there's a water user with a water right that wants to pull his water right out of a water use group and go do something else, it doesn't require the quantification of all of the other water rights. But because it could have an impact on the other water users, all of them have to agree to that change.
What happened here? Boyd?
Jumped on the magic
button. Did I? Which button did I hit? Sorry. Well, okay.
So that's one approach that we've included to try and help public water suppliers. Also, this same concept would apply to the state engineer's efforts. If we receive an application to apportion beneficial uses among water rights in a water use group, the state engineer may determine that he doesn't have to quantify all of the water rights. He may limit his efforts. He'll go through the same process and request the same information from everyone, but he may only quantify the one water right that will be affected by the administrative action that needs to be taken. The other approach that we took, the other addition to these rules, is another exception in the rule. And as we looked at it and thought about it, we actually realized that we have two types of water use groups. We have the first type is probably the most common type, is where the water use group has a defined limit of beneficial uses. Let's say for irrigation, the entire group, for example, might irrigate 100 acres. But we don't know how much of that 100 acres should be apportioned to each of the water rights in the group. However, we have other water use groups for, like, municipalities, where they are lumped, those water rights are lumped together or put together in a water use group solely because they are used in the same area. And the group itself has no limitation on the beneficial uses, like acres or numbers of domestic units that can be applied to. There might be a limit as to acre feet, but there isn't a limit on the beneficial uses. In those types of situations where a water use group has been created solely to describe the use of water rights within the same area, we feel that those types of water use groups don't need to have declarations submitted on them. And so as an exception, and as I indicated, mostly public water suppliers will fall into that category with those types of water use groups. But we think that should be another area that will help decrease or at least eliminate any unintended impacts from this rule on public water suppliers. There was also a concern about temporary change applications and what this rule would do as far as requiring declarations on temporary change applications. So we have put an exception that was actually in the original version of the rule that we created about a year and a half or 2 years ago. It got dropped out. We put that back in, that the state engineer can waive the requirement for those declarations if he feels that there's enough water, enough beneficial use amounts in that group to satisfy a change, that the water rate can temporarily be moved out without impacting the uses that occur in the original place of use. Also, there was a request about being notified if a water right gets changed or gets modified, the water use group that it's in, if it gets taken out of a water use group or if it gets quantified as part of a declaration, is there a way that the water user can be assigned? And so we have adopted a procedure that whenever there is a water right database update based upon a change in a water use group, that change will be documented in the water right file with a memo to the file. That memo will be scanned, and scanning that document will trigger that automatic email process. And so if you're registered for that process for that particular water right, you'll get an update to be notified that there's been a change made to that water right. We think that's probably the best that we can do as far as notifying people on changes. Also, that there's a section that we've had in here on requests for review from water users to the state engineer. And we thought that what we had there, we didn't really change the content or the process, but we thought it needed to be clarified. And the intent of that process, and this is, I think, paragraph 2 or section 2 of the rule, the intent of that process is that if a water user feels that our water rights database doesn't accurately reflect the file, the one of the state engineer's file, that's when we would think that they could request a review, and we would go through to make sure that those two are concur with each other and reflect each other. And so we've gone through, and the wording is just to clarify that concept. Also, this is the process that we think that water users would use if they think that we have grouped their water rights incorrectly. If they feel that their water rights are put together wrong, they can come through this process and talk to us about what needs to be done to correct that. As long as it corresponds to the state engineer's files, then we'll go ahead and make those changes. If it doesn't, then there probably needs to be some change applications filed on those water rights to get them in the groups that the water user wants to have them in. Also, we wanted to clarify some things on what constitutes agency action in this rule. And the changes we made in a couple of places were to indicate that the only time that it's really a final agency action is when the state engineer issues an order pursuant to an application to apportion beneficial uses among water rights. Every other step, every other action that's part of this is really an intermediate step in the process. And that was probably maybe clear to everyone before, but we just wanted to make sure that that was clear in the rule. And that's the only time that really UAPA would come into play is when the state engineer issues that final action. And really, that's we think we addressed really the majority of the comments and the concerns that we received. We feel that, as Ken indicated, that we just don't know where else to go, I guess, to be able to address the concerns. If you've got questions, I think we'd try to address those now. And I know you've just gotten this today, but honestly, we just had it ready this morning, so we couldn't get it out to you any sooner.
So in the last meeting we came to, we kind of, as a federal agency on the stock water, we felt that we wouldn't be required to fill out these group contribution or sole supply statements. Now I'm feeling like maybe we are going to be required to. We kind of felt like there was an exemption that federal agencies.
There was. I know that we got a request from the Bureau for a specific exemption for the Bureau.
And Bureau
of Reclamation.
Okay, now we're with the Forest Service.
Oh, the Forest Service. Well, there wasn't an exemption in there before.
It just said federal agencies. We just kind of felt like maybe that
If you're talking about, let's see, perhaps you're talking about on page, in the exemptions.
Number five.
Number five, the reason we took that out was that we felt by taking that out, that made it broader, that anybody then would qualify for that exemption, not just federal agencies.
So
that doesn't, it really shouldn't affect you at all.
Okay, so the Bureau sent you a letter saying they wanted to be excluded from this. Is this something the Forest Service could do as well?
Well, we didn't. We read their letter, and but we didn't accept their concern. We think that we covered their concerns with all of these others that we talked about for public water suppliers.
Right.
And covered any situations where they might feel they have a problem. Wendy.
Break down the language of the first exemption.
Okay.
It's a little confusing to me. I think we're going to walk through it.
Okay.
You might understand. We start with water use groups created for the public water supply.
Okay.
I'm not sure what you mean by created for public water supplies.
That probably means the public water suppliers are water right holders in that water right group.
Okay, so if they are within the group at all,
that's right.
Have to be something they've initiated.
No.
Because my concern was just the inverse. We end up with an individual water supply for within the same service area.
Oh, right. Yeah, no, this means that if the public water suppliers are part of a water use group, and that group has been created to describe the extent of the beneficial uses, doesn't describe the extent of the water users, but it's a group that's been put together because the water rights are used in the same general area.
Okay, so it's any water use group that contains public water.
Yes, as long as it met those other criteria also.
Okay, that's the next criteria. Okay, they do not describe the extent of the beneficial uses.
Right.
As I'm reading this, I'm assuming we're talking about water rights that would probably be municipal rights that are defined by flow,
right,
rather than specific beneficial.
That's right. That's correct.
It could even be a group of water rights owned by a public water supply for municipal purposes, acre foot set up. And it could be that, and they're in this group, and here's a total number of acre feet.
Okay, that
would
be my next question. What if it does say?
Well, but that's similar to flow, I guess, is what we're saying.
Okay.
Yeah, so
but it still doesn't define, so, but it's not going to say irrigation, it's just going to say
municipal use.
So probably what we're really getting at here is it would have to be defined to municipal use, instead of commercial irrigation or stock that we use, that would then define.
Right. Acres, if it has those types of limitations in there, then that's when we need to quantify it.
And say you have a private individual right in that service area where the public water supply is serving, it may show up in a group for the public water supplier. And I think what the public water supplier does or the individual does is say, we are not really part of that group. We need to separate that out.
Well,
it's a separate group.
But also, one of the concerns we had was that sometimes that relationship needs to be kept intact. But there is a supplemental relationship between the individual water right and the municipalities, and they don't want to separate. They don't want to break that relationship.
There are some situations like with Salt Lake City and the LDS Church where they're backing each other up. And they want to remain supplemental, from what we understand. So they want to stay in that group. But we need to know what they are.
So in that situation, if the LDS Church wanted to file some kind of a change application, then we drop back to that other provision that says, well, you don't need to file a declaration on all the water rights in the group, but all the water right holders in the group have to agree to it. So they'd have to come to you for their permission, but that wouldn't trigger a declaration on any of the other municipal rights in the group.
And if I'm a municipality and I purchase an irrigation rights, then I have to go through a change application process and become municipal rights.
So
then we're not defining the extent of beneficial use.
Well, if you're purchasing a right that's part of a group, of a beneficial use group over here, before it could be changed, you would have to get a declaration to quantify it and bring it over.
Once I've changed it, though.
But once you've changed it and put it with the municipal use group over here, then.
Then it's going to lose its.
Well, no, it'll keep its characteristics, and it will always have that definition associated with it.
So that would be one you wouldn't have.
No.
You will have quantified that before it came into the group.
And so
once it's in the group, it's got an individual quantification, but it is really part of the group.
If you ever want to move that again, you're already quantified. So you're covered. You don't have to do anything with it.
And that's what we struggle a little bit with municipal or public water supplier exemptions totally from this thing, because there are times when the well purchase water rights that are in supplemental groups. You've got to define what that is in order to get it into
the group. And I don't think there's any question going into the municipality. I think we're just trying to make sure once it is
in the municipality. Once it's in, then I think we're okay. We don't have to do that.
Are we
special exemptions of where they want
I'm still thinking through a possibility where I could have a defined definition.
Keep thinking. We'll go to Justin here, though.
Well, you may have answered my question. I don't know. We have some water rights where we have defined big areas, but we don't call them service areas, and they're not strictly municipal. They do specify acres, but we don't tie down acres to sections. It's this many acres in this large area. I wondered if that would be seen as more the specific case or more the public water supplier case, which camp that would follow.
Probably doesn't fall under the exception that we've got here, but it probably falls under the other one, where if a change is filed on one of those individual rights, they may come to the Bureau and say, is this okay? But
we...
Or that could be a situation where they really shouldn't be part of that group, and we could take the group apart. And
so we don't want to tie down, I appreciate that you're only quantifying the rights being changed, so I won't help. But I don't know that we want to be approving all these individual changes that just happen to fall within our larger definitions.
Yes. But.
And we are, we do on some of our projects, we specify M&I, and then we specify number of acres.
Yeah. But you're talking about situations where you are supplemental with an individual water right that may or may not be a true supplemental situation. If it's not, we can certainly take that group apart, take the Bureau out.
I don't think we have too much power if you go try to have to quantify the individual right. But we don't want a quantification that would be binding on the larger, but our
right,
larger,
right.
Because that water, at any time, without a change, can be moved to other areas within the umbrella.
And I think the way it's set up right now, that's what this allows. If somebody's in that senior service area, they would come back and it might show in that group. Either, to a couple of things. One, we could just take it out of the group. Or two, then they would quantify just that right, and it doesn't affect everything else.
I'm just not sure how much. We don't always have personal knowledge of what individual irrigators are doing within the group, so we might have a difficult time, signing for that. But it's something we'll look at.
Well, it honestly, I think from the Bureau's perspective, whatever they quantify their right to be will never have an impact on the Bureau's right. So you could almost just sign those without even looking at them, and you're probably okay.
I don't know if we want. Yeah, we don't have water use histories of every individual user of our water.
Right.
And that would be a difficult thing for us to come up with.
So an individual user should
not on our water, but if they're on their own well, let's say they have a well. A strawberry is a classic case where it's almost all supplemental.
But see, I think that what I was trying to say is whatever their well is quantified to be, if it's say it's supplemental strawberry water.
Right.
It should not have an impact at all. I mean, the reason we ask all the other water users to sign is because in most water use groups, taking something out would have an impact on the other water users, what their rights are worth.
Yes.
But in your situation, whatever they take out isn't going to change at all.
That is our
definition.
Right. Our definitions are for our water users.
Right.
Kind of outside the system.
Right.
Very flexible.
Okay. I'm
going to
follow up on that. Okay. Let's pretend there's not an individual. There is a use group that is the Bureau of Water Rights. That is all the Bureau of Water Rights. And they want to file a change application. One of the things.
That's the other way around. Yeah.
Going to MI. I mean, those rights do define a benefit of use. need to go and quantify that entire use group? Say there's 10 water rights that create the bureaus.
Yeah, we have a group of water rights that we would consider our strawberry project water rights.
Right.
But there's other water rights that have been grouped with them.
Right.
How do we change our water rights?
Well, just because it's only one water user owns the entire group doesn't mean that he has to define all of the water rights in the group. He can still just define one of them and take it out. But you still have other groups.
I think that's where we'd probably come after the correction. Maybe we'd say on our applications to incorporate we don't have. I don't know, but we'll have to work with them.
Well,
but they would get an exemption, right? Because they are defined beneficiaries.
Right, yeah.
So they can't get under this exemption. They would have to come in and like this and ask.
Yeah. Probably, because we would need to know what we're taking out of that group. If they're defined beneficial uses there, we would need to know what we're taking out of that group to go do something else with. So we really would need to know that, even though they own all of them.
Well, M&I is probably the most likely to take irrigation to M&I.
We would need to know what we're changing to M&I.
I don't know that we can tell wherever irrigation water went. We don't know if we can give you specific locations.
Well, I don't know that we can answer every question, Justin. I think we'll just have to try it and see what.
But we can change our. We can make other changes, like to our points of diversions, as long as they don't affect the use.
Yeah. Other questions?
Yeah, Lee, I have a follow-up on in your new handout stamp, page 3.
Okay.
The number 2 there.
Okay.
So you went to a meeting in November, and you went over, these are only required when all 4 of these conditions are met. That's
okay.
And that remains unchanged.
Right.
So I'm just thinking, say, if a federal land management agency was seeking a change on one water right in a use group, as long as they're not trying to remove it from the group, then it wouldn't apply.
That's right. Okay. That's right.
Sorry, a lot of the comments submitted in that same section, page 3, subsection 2A, suggest the change in may only be required as opposed to shall be required. And I think the reason for that suggestion was that if the idea is all 4 of those have to be satisfied before the declaration is required, the may only might capture that intent more than the shall. Is there a reason why that change wasn't made?
Maybe we read that change or that comment differently. We didn't want to weaken the requirement.
Okay.
And we thought, I guess personally, I thought that by putting may only be required was weaker than shall. That when we do need them, if these conditions do apply, we do want a declaration to be submitted.
I guess the concern was that by saying it shall be required when all 4 of these are satisfied, it doesn't limit requiring those in other situations, even if those 4 aren't satisfied.
Well, I know if you go back to the exception on the last page, the exception that's now number 2 talks about the situation where the state engineer can require one of these in other situations. And one of the changes is there that I should have left in red is at the end of 2. It used to say that the state engineer could require one. And now it says it has to be a declaration that's consistent with the rule. So our thinking is that we would only require it in those situations that were listed in number 2 before. And so I don't know that we'll just be asking for one any time.
Right. So the reading of that is really that you need to have those 4 before one is required.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's how we look at it. While you're still looking at that page, there's some other words that didn't get taken out in number 3. we talked about a partial declaration, and partial should really be struck there. It will be in the final version that's on the web. Because there is no really such thing as a partial declaration anymore. Other questions? Like Kent said, I guess we still have a little time. We would like to get this into the Division of Administrative Rules very quickly because we would like to move forward. If you have something in the next couple of days, we'd be open to listening to it if it's really major change. And if we don't make that deadline, there's always the advertising period when it goes through, or the publication period when it's published in the Administrative Rule or the Federal or the State Register. So, turn it back over to you, Ken.
I think that's basically it, why we wanted to get this together. This was not a required meeting for this rule, but we really are interested in getting input and making sure you know where we are with the process and understanding what we're doing. I know there's still a little concern, but if you can let us know if there are things that we can do to modify this, we think we have a pretty good attempt here and try to address situations, to address municipal uses and individual uses and federal government uses, and I think there are ways that we can work through this system and not make it overly burdensome, but yet give you as the water user and us as the state engineer's office the type of information we need to be able to process change applications. So, like I said, if you've got comments, get them to us quickly, and we're in the process of moving forward. Appreciate you being here and for your input. It's made a difference in what we've done here and pulling these rules together. It's a difficult concept, I think, to understand what we're doing with these and how it applies to every situation, but we were trying to make it as easy as possible. We have been understanding there's a critical water right evaluation function that has to occur with this as we look through our administrative processes. So it's an important rule to get done as far as we're concerned. And again, we appreciate your input and your help in this. This has been very beneficial to us. So thank you so much. Thanks for being here. Mm-hmm.